Those of us attending the state fair next month will notice a reduced presence for the State Department of Natural Resources. Its two-acre exhibit will be cut down into a smaller area called Exploratory Park. The DNR says they remain committed to the fair, but on a smaller scale.
But our next guest says he thinks it's part of a pattern showing an effort by the department to retreat from public outreach education. He says that trend, along with legislative efforts on the environment, is taking Wisconsin far away from its long history of conservation.
John Gerda joins us now. He's a Milwaukee-based writer and historian. He's written 21 books, including The Making of Milwaukee, which was the basis for an Emmy Award-winning documentary series. He also recently wrote an opinion piece for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on the DNR and Wisconsin's environment. You can find it on the Central Time Facebook page. John, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Kate.
Well, let us begin with the state fair that opens August 3rd coming up. And the DNR is saying it will have this diminished presence there this year. What do we know about how it will differ from what they've done at the fair in the past, their tradition?
I think all they're doing is promoting state parks and natural areas and the fish tanks and the ponds and the smoky schoolhouse and the forestry exhibits, the wildlife exhibits, all that will be gone. Even though it was largely, or very largely, volunteer hours put in by DNR employees. Instead, there will be the UW Extension. Master Gardeners will have some exhibits there, but it won't be the same, you know, as kind of the showcase for Wisconsin's resources that have been there for close to 70 years. You know, so it really has been a part of the state fair tradition.
And the DNR has cited smaller budgets, smaller staffing leading to this decision?
Well, when you cut budgets and you cut staff, this is a self-inflicted wound. And I think the pattern that is very clear here is that since the Walker administration has taken over the DNR, they've acted, in my opinion, much like foxes in a hen house. You know, there have been rather drastic cuts in the staff. There are fewer employees investigating fewer complaints and issuing fewer citations. So it's I'm not saying that it's been completely sold to corporate interests, but there's been just a sea change in the way the DNR approaches its task of protecting and promoting Wisconsin's natural resources.
And what do you see as some of these incidents, some of these turning points thus far that you have seen during the Walker administration from the DNR in its tradition of being this public outreach element?
Some are certainly related to staffing. Early on, they cut the scientific staff, you know, and the basis of science is what you hope decisions will be founded on. But then there are just some ham-handed, sort of head-shaking kind of moves, trying, for instance, to cut out the Natural Resources magazine, even though it was self-supporting and cost, I think, less than $10 a year for six issues. So just these things that seem almost gratuitous, petty, kind of small-minded and mean-spirited. And I think, to me, it kind of indicates a lack of willingness to engage and an interest in kind of blunting the message. And it's not just climate change. You know, it's kind of the respect for the environment that's been just a huge, huge part of the Wisconsin tradition.
Let's talk a little bit about environment and the DNR's approach to protecting the environment. Have you seen the decision-making there change as well?
The article in the Journal Sentinel a couple of weeks ago got a number of emails, and yes, you know, there were comments from people who had direct experience, everything from the full-time naturalist complement in the entire state is now four people who are interpreting our natural resources to the public at nature centers and other public facilities. Got an email from a retired game warden who said that there's been It's kind of been open season for poaching, and some of the regulations have been adopted. He said, you know, it's just boggles the mind. You know, he said that in the previous regulations, if a warden found a hunter in a tree stand with a loaded rifle at midnight watching a large corn pile, he could issue a citation. Now the warden cannot unless he's there and physically watching the hunter in the act of shooting. So it's kind of, he said it was just, as a retired warden, you know, someone who was just dismayed at the changes. Another woman, you know, got called and said that they're up there in Rock Island, state park there off the tip of Washington Island, and there were buildings that were crumbling, and there were signs saying repairs to be completed in 2016. here we are in 2017, and there had been nothing done. So yes, you know, I don't have a handle on as sprawling as an agency as the DNR is, but there are very clearly, and people are seeing, you know, the signs of kind of a deterioration in mission and its facilities.
We're talking right now with John Gerda. He is a Milwaukee-based writer and historian. Recently wrote an opinion piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the DNR changes in the DNR and Wisconsin's environment, and also in the conservation tradition you have seen in the past. Let's take us to conservation and its rich history of environmentalism and conservation. When did this tradition start, John?
Back in the years, even before statehood. So you have people early on, back in the mid-1800s, and these are national figures, some 19th century, some in the 20th as well. People like Increase Lapham, pioneer scientist who had an major impact and started the U.S. Weather Service and was the mapper of Indian Mounds in Wisconsin. John Muir, who was the founder of the National Park System as well as the founder of the Sierra Club. He was raised on a Marquette County farm, later moved to California, but he talks about the lessons of the Wisconsin wilderness, you know, were his practical education. Charles Whitnell, who's the father of Milwaukee's park system that is one of the finest in the entire country, and the very famous Aldo Leopold, whose Sand County Almanac is kind of a Bible of the environmental movement. Gaylord Nelson, senator, governor, who was the founder of Earth Day. And you look at that, I call them a pantheon of environmental all-stars. And for a state our size and population, that is just a huge contribution to the cause of conservation, both nationally and internationally. I don't think California or New York, you know, have that that distinguished a group of people who were trying to protect the environment.
And Aldo Leopold, specifically, he wrote about the land ethic, this idea that inspired those who came after him. What was this land ethic, and are we following it today?
The land ethic, very simply, is trying to turn around. Leopold was trying to turn around the concept of land as a commodity that belonged to us and instead see ourselves as belonging to a community that was based on the land. So kind of not what we own, but what we belong to. And that really is a sea change. And that inspired Nelson, among others, and certainly is, you know, has kind of a global repercussions. You know, he is a revered figure around the world. But I would say, as I said in the article, you have this on the shoulders of these giants, you know, like Leopold and Nelson, we now have a gang of Lilliputians who are in charge of our natural resources. So I do see a rather wholesale retreat from that ethic.
Lisa on Facebook says, I'm glad I got to be alive and experience the results of these original conservationists who actually made America, and specifically this state, great before our current leaders undo it all. What role should this history play in our decision-making today?
I think it should be the ballast. It should be the keel that directs our decision-making. And this is not that, it's fairly recent. You know, this is the changes have been fairly recent. You know, you have, not too many decades ago, you have people like Warren Knowles and Gaylord Nelson, a Republican and a Democrat, both very interested in conservation, both interested in putting aside prime land, prime environmental land for the use of the public. So you have the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Fund that has set aside something like 600,000 acres for us, that is our land, and the Republicans are trying very hard to dismantle that program and kind of channel it to other sources. Kind of the promise was to use it to fund scholarships for Wisconsin students to UW, but it's kind of, as I said, it's kind of mixing poison with honey, and it would end, you know, that program. So I think you look at history as kind of why things are the way they are, and we have this long tradition, and my hope, my sincere hope, is that the current administration is out of step with what is still an enduring and durable Wisconsin tradition, and the pendulum will swing back, and even in the near future, people will realize kind of what's being lost and what is being threatened, and return to this, the values we held for so many decades before.
We're talking with Wisconsin historian John Gerda about his concerns over the direction of the state's environmental policy and the DNR straying from Wisconsin's long tradition of conservation.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the DNR's decision to cut back their presence at the state fair? Was that an exhibit you've attended in the past? How do you think Wisconsin's history of conservation and environmentalism should affect our decisions today? Do you think cuts to things like state parks and the DNR scientific staff are tough but necessary choices in making the budget work? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue this conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with writer and historian John Gerda. His recent opinion piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel says the DNR's decision to cut back its presence at the state fair is part of a troubling trend away from the state's history of environmental protection and conservation.
And we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the DNR under the Walker administration? Are you concerned about the environment as scientists are cut from the department and outreach programs are trimmed down? Or do you support streamlining the DNR through budget cuts? If you hunt, fish, or just love the outdoors, what parts of the environment do you think need our protection? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. John, you described the DNR as a sprawling agency. Is large agencies, can that be sustained? I mean, there are tight budget times. Is this inevitable that an agency would be slimmed down?
I don't think so. I think it's the nature of something as complicated as the environment over an area of 72 counties. No, there is a necessity for the scale of an organization. And certainly, can you find efficiencies? Of course you can. You can in any organization, any section of any organization. But I think the larger reality is that you have this juggernaut that is kind of being derailed, and I think, I would argue, slowly dismantled. So I've got a story that my father-in-law, a Norwegian pastor, would always say. He talked about a farmer who was trying to wean his pig from food, and he said, "I gave him a little less every day, a little less every day, and I almost had him weaned, and then he died." So it's kind of, I mean, what's going on? If you starve the body politic, if you sort of stem the flow of funds to agencies like the DNR, there will be kind of a death of the effort. So these, in my opinion, are self-inflicted wounds. You know, if we value the environment and everything from the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund to wardens, you know, who are enforcing game laws, you know, common sense game laws, I think that is an expense for the common good that we all need to shoulder. So I think the emphasis on tax cutting, you know, tight budgetary times, yes, but again, those are that's a chosen term. It's kind of a chosen environment. We can do better. We can do otherwise.
Let's go to Greg in Milwaukee. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Hey, I'd like to say this. When I was a child, what I just said before, when I was a child, I could walk across the street and see bronze, coppers, hair streaks, Ganky, sulfurs, yellow. I would run up the puddles and just make the yellow clouds burst off every after there was a rainstorm. All the little yellow sulfurs would land and suck up the juice. They're gone. I mean, all this stuff is gone. And this was just in the suburbs of Milwaukee. And it's all gone. The tadpoles, the frogs were everywhere. Now the fish are losing their food. When you were, and I've worked in microbiology and bacteriology and mycology, and when you want to raise funguses, viruses, and bacteria, you raise the CO2 in the environment. We're doing that to the earth. And if we don't get these Republicans out of office, our children are going to suffer such a bad. The ramifications of our actions are terrible.
And so, John, what are the ecological changes we are seeing around the state? And there's also been at issue chronic wasting disease.
Chronic wasting disease certainly is a potential danger to human wealth, human health, as well as the white-tailed deer herd. But I think the larger changes going on are very certainly climatic, and there are climate change deniers in the state legislature and certainly in the ranks of the administration as well. And I think there is only one right answer, and we will know it. And I think we'll know it before we realize. And I think you have 97% of the world scientists saying that there is climate change. It is accelerating. It is perhaps at this point unstoppable. It's important to pay attention. You know, as I've said, we believe the scientists when they say the sun is 93 million miles away, but when it comes to climate change, maybe not. You know, maybe you know, we're entitled to our alternative facts, which I think is deeply troubling.
Well, Greg, thank you for calling in and sharing your observations there. Let's go now to Sarah in Wanakee. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I just kind of want to start this with the whole idea of the DNR might have been a victim of their own success. So as people became more invested in the idea of the DNR enforcing all these regulations, they also were writing tickets for people, you know, the average Joe fishing without a license. And so then there kind of became this view of them like, well, they're the Department of No Reason. They have no reason to be doing this. They have no value. They're issuing these. What might be seen as like invalid tickets or something that really isn't, you know, really that important. So then when it starts becoming defunded, people are like, well, that's fine. It's the Department of No Reason. They've had no value because all I've ever heard are these BS stories about, you know, this guy got a ticket for fishing without a license or, you know, this farmer got a ticket for this or whatever. So.
Sarah, thank you so much for calling in. John, your reaction?
I think certainly it's a human agency. And as such, you know, I'm not claiming by any means that the DNR, compared to any other human agency, is a galaxy of saints. Certainly there may have been bureaucratic overstep and overreaching, but I think it's really critical to underline that even though there may have been instances when people did feel they were being unfairly ticketed, the larger reality is that this is the agency that enforces the regulations and is the protector of the resources that we need to pass on as intact as we possibly can to the people who come after us. So you take that apart and it becomes simply a free-for-all.
John, do we know where public opinion stands on spending state money to protect the environment?
We certainly do. There was a 2015 study, and it was very intentionally both Republican and Democratic, and the people responding, and it was 90% of the respondents thought that it was important to spend additional conservation funding to put aside land, even in times of fiscal stringency. So this was not simply something people looked at as a luxury, kind of the Cadillac option. Wisconsinites think of this as their birthright. And I think it's being threatened.
Let's take another call now. Dan in Fitchburg. Hi, Dan.
Good afternoon. I want to thank you both very much for talking about this critical issue. I'll try to say a lot quickly. So I have worked with DNR folks as a volunteer and also with the agency as an LTE, and I have been very, very impressed with the integrity of these people. They've been jerked around as different reorganizations happen, and what they are attempting to do of taking care of our fundamental needs for the environment is critical. Once you get to the point of having polluted water, bad air, and you've got your landscape covered with invasives, basically we've damaged our home. And we need to understand that. The bureaucrats have their head in the sand and their hands in other people's pocketbooks. And these things need to stop. We need the public to pay attention to what's going on because we're being stolen from.
Dan, thank you so much. John, you know, how does big business also factor in with what Dan is saying here and its role in Wisconsin?
It's a large question, but I think Gaylord Nelson's line that the economy is not does not depend on the environment. The economy, actually, what he said is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment. So I don't think by any means there is mutual exclusion between good business and big business and good environmental practices. No, there are numerous firms in Wisconsin who are doing their best to mitigate their impacts on the environment, but I think in the current dispensation is kind of as you see so many cases of wetland conversions, you know, permits for deep aquifer wells, you know, where the motion, the direction is away from keeping the environment safe for us to keeping the environment safe for business, which I think is the wrong way to go.
So in years when state revenue is tight and there's lots of other competing sectors that need funding, how do you think the environment should figure into our debates?
I think the environment should be a critically important part of our debate. And I think we should reject the notion that all we want is lower taxes. And what has happened to government in not just Wisconsin but around the country is that there was a time in Milwaukee and Wisconsin when government was felt to be a fundamentally cooperative us, and all these things were our commonwealth. And that, I think of that as two words. And what's happened, and it's just the last 15 years or so, is that that whole notion of government has been turned around, so now we think of it as kind of a predatory them. So that us and them mentality really needs to be turned around, and we need to kind of reclaim that tradition of that Wisconsinites have always held dear, of we do this for all of us. We have these state parks. We buy these natural areas. You know, we take care of the roadsides and the natural areas and try to keep out the invasives as a benefit to all of us and to future generations as well.
And very quickly here as we wrap up, what can ordinary everyday people do as they watch how this situation unfolds in politics and in the environment?
Well, I think certainly there are common sense things to do as trying to mitigate our impact on the climate, certainly. We can do as recyclers and reducing, reusing, recycling. But I think in terms of the DNR, this is a politically politicized agency, and since that's the root of the problem, the root of the solution has to be political as well. And that means putting as much pressure as we possibly can on our legislators, the Walker administration.
And I'm going to have to leave it there, John. Thank you so much for joining us. He's a Milwaukee writer and historian talking about his concerns that the state is putting the environment at risk.